day than I have. I noticed.
He tucked his hands into his front pockets, leaned back, and studied his shoes.
Have you ever found yourself in a self-made hell and have no way of digging out without someone getting hurt?
Neil cracked a smile.
I've been to war. I'd do it all differently if I could, Neil.
So differently. Neil's silence made Hunter look up.
Would you take a bullet for her? Yes?
There was no hesitation. Neil extended his hand.
Barring any unexpected activity, I'll be here tomorrow.
Hunter slipped into the room as quietly as he could. He tried to stay away, told himself she was better off alone than by his side. He couldn't stand the thought of Gabby thinking the worst of him. She'd been crying before she fell asleep. Her eyes were swollen and black smudges lived under her eyes. One look at the cast and he cringed. He removed his shoes and moved to the bed. Fully clothed, he sat carefully before settling his back against the headboard, his feet on the bed. He lifted the pillow holding her arm and carefully placed them both on his lap. He wanted to make this right, wanted to make them right. At this rate, Gabby was destined to walk out of his life just as quickly as she'd entered it, only she was taking something with her that was more precious than money. He felt like a thief when she shifted in her sleep and moved closer to his side. He didn't have a shred of decency as he relaxed into her unconscious presence. It was all borrowed time, time that would have to take him through a coming storm.
I do care, Gabby,
he whispered to her sleeping frame.
Please don't walk out of my life.
She sighed in her sleep, and Hunter closed his eyes. Chapter 31. The shrill alarm of the telephone brought Hunter to full awake in a second. Beside him, Gabby jumped, then moaned. Shh, he said, trying to soothe her nerves. He caught the call on the second ring. What are you doing in here? Gabby said as she pushed away from him. He lifted a hand as he scooted up the bed and lifted the phone to his ear.
Hello?
The voice on the line was muffled, incomprehensible. Hunter? Gabby was on her feet and glaring at him.
Dude, who is this?
He asked the caller on the phone while he turned on the bedside light.
This is some crazy shit. Remington?
The voice was slurred and sounded like it was coming from a mouth full of cotton.
Blackwell, are you here?
Gabby was stewing beside the bed. Hunter waved her off and placed a finger over his lips.
Are you drunk?
Remington started to laugh and then moaned.
Hurts, man. Dudes. Fucked me up.
What the hell is going on? What are you talking about?
Two Mexican dudes. Big fists.
Hunter's head calculated the information Remington could reveal.
Did you tell them about Hayden? They knew about... Ugh, fuckers broke my nose.
The door to the room opened and Solomon stepped inside.
Focus, Remington. What did they know about? Hayden. Knew he was gone. Not the target.
Hunter did a double take at Gabby to assure himself she was still there.
Don't do drugs, Blackwell. This is crazy.
Drugs? Where are you, Remington?
The PI muttered a few incoherent sentences. Hunter placed his hand over the receiver.
Can we trace this?
We're working on it, Solomon said.
Goddamn truth serum. I'm good with secrets. You know that, right? Dude.
The fact that Remington kept calling him dude was evidence enough to know that he was high on something.
Are you at home, Remington? No. Feel sick.
Hunter leaned over and tugged on his shoes.
Where are you?
All Hunter got was another muttering to not take drugs. Dennis ran into the room with a piece of paper and thrust it into Solomon's hands.
Neil is already on his way.
Hunter looked down at the address and froze. Gabby came up beside him, placed a hand on his arm. Who is it?
My dad.
She bit her lip and shoved him. Go. Genuine concern filled her gaze. He leaned over, kissed her hard, once, then said,
Don't leave the house.
She shoved him again. Go.
We'll take my car,
Solomon said as they left the room together. Gabby heard the gate open and close and turned her attention to the stranger in her kitchen.
I'm Dennis.
One of Neil's men?
Yeah,
He nodded toward the back stairs.
I gotta get back to my post.
She'd seen men coming and going downstairs the day before, but hadn't asked why. I'll make coffee.
That'd be great.
She offered a smile she didn't feel, and one-handedly set the pot to brew. She wasn't sure what had just happened. From the tragic expression on Hunter's face, his dad was in danger, hurt, or worse.
Gabby filled the coffee pot with water, dumped it into the machine, and proceeded to grind the beans. The buzz of the grinder stopped and the phone rang. She jumped. She looked around, realized she was alone, and saw Hunter's cell number light up the caller ID.
Hunter?
The line was full of static.
Is this Mrs. Blackwell?
The voice was female.
Her heart started to pound.
Yes?
Yeah, there's been an accident, corner of Bellagio and Sunset. Your husband, he handed me his phone.
Gabby dropped the coffee grounds in her hand.
Is he okay?
He's messed up pretty bad. She started to shake.
Did someone call the paramedics? I hear sirens. I gotta move my car.
The woman hung up and Gabby tossed the phone on the counter. The keys to the cars sat in a bowl in the foyer table. She grabbed them and turned toward the door.
Dennis ran up the back stairs. Wait.
No time. There's been an accident. I've gotta go.
She was already out the front door. Dennis ran beside her and yelled for Connor, who stood at the gate. Gabby opened the garage door and decided the Maserati would get her there quicker. She opened the driver's door only to have Connor push in.
I'll drive.
She looked at her broken arm and relented. He sped out of the drive and down the street, avoiding the cars as he went.
They crashed on Sunset, Gabby told him.
Connor kept looking out his rearview mirror. He rolled the stop sign and kept his foot on the accelerator. Thank God he was driving because her entire body was shaking. Solomon and Hunter had sped off so fast, an accident could have been predicted. She clenched her free hand and sent a prayer that Hunter was okay. They didn't need this, not with all the chaos infused in their life. Traffic thickened the closer they got to Sunset. Connor made a few illegal moves, had cars honking as he passed them. Gabby held on and craned her neck to peer ahead. Connor's cell phone rang. She was shocked to see him pull it out and click into the call.
Yeah?
The intersection was closing in fast. Traffic flowed.
Oh, shit.
Connor slammed on the brakes and swung the car around. Gabby lunged forward, felt a vibration up her arm, under her cast.
Where are you going?
It's a setup.
A car slowed in front of them. Connor twisted the wheel and sped in the opposite lane of traffic.
A setup? So there wasn't an accident?
No.
She didn't know whether to be relieved or frightened. Connor kept looking in his rearview mirror, until Gabby twisted around to see what he was looking at.
Hang on.
He punched the accelerator as a car pulled into their lane. The car behind them kissed the back bumper, pushing them into a full spin. When they came to a stop, Gabby looked past the exploded airbags and up into the lights of a car glaring at her through the driver's side door. Connor was pinned and she was dazed. Someone yanked her door open.
Are you okay?
She set her hand over Connor's.
Connor?
He mumbled.
We need an ambulance,
Gabby said. She looked again at the man at her door. He wore a suit, as if he were on his way to work. His dark fingers were holding onto her arm.
I've got you, Gabriella.
She focused on his face again.
Do I know you?
That's when she felt the pinch and an all-too-familiar rush of heat move through the beat of her heart. Her last thought, as the stranger helped her out of the car, was not again. They were speeding through the valley toward the 101 when Solomon answered his phone. Hunter looked up from the list of contacts in his phone to find Solomon swerving to the off-ramp.
What the? Gabby and Connor just left the house.
Hunter dropped his phone.
What? She got a call. Someone told her you and I were in an accident.
No.
No, no, no. Gabby on the road with Connor? Alone?
Hurry. I am.
Solomon drifted through the light, took the on-ramp too fast, bottomed out the car twice before he made speed. What felt like forever couldn't have been more than 10 minutes, and he and Solomon were closing in on the street that turned up into the neighborhood of his new home. A fire truck blocked the road. Police cars were everywhere. Hunter pushed out of the rolling car and ran. The closer he came to the scene, the deeper the despair in his stomach. The Maserati was a mangled mess of metal. The fire department was preparing to rip the roof of the car away from the frame. When others stood to the side to watch, as if this were a spectator sport, Hunter ran into the scene in search of one person.
Hey!
Someone called his way. Hunter kept his feet moving. The passenger door was open. The seat was empty. Someone grabbed him and tried to hold him back.
This is my car,
he yelled at the uniformed man trying to hold him back.
Gabby?
He ducked down to see Connor lying across the center of the car.
Connor? We need to clear this area.
Hunter twisted away and knelt by the car.
Connor!
The man focused.
Set up.
Where's Gabby?
WLH-649.
What?
Hunter was past the point of panic.
WLH-649.
He kept repeating the letters and numbers until someone finally grabbed Hunter by his stomach and pulled him away. He struggled out of the police hold.
My wife was in the car. Where is she?
The cop kept a safe distance and looked around.
We didn't find a woman in the car.
Hunter spun in a circle.
Someone had to see something.
Solomon ran toward him. Hunter grabbed him in a panic.
She's gone. Oh, fuck, Solomon, he has her. We don't know that.
Hunter pushed away and started yelling toward the horde of looky-loos.
Who saw what happened? Someone saw something.
The crowd parted around him, fearful of the crazy man yelling at strangers. Finally, one of the police officers was able to corral him long enough to tell him what they knew. Gabby, or a woman with a broken arm and dark hair, had stumbled out of the car on the arm of a well-dressed Hispanic man. Goatee, dark hair, tall. Looked like she was really messed up but able to walk. Kind of. Four-door car, maybe gray, maybe silver. Honda, Acura, maybe an older Lexus. Hard to say. They sped off toward sunset. No one followed. Connor was pulled from the car, heavily concussed with an unknown amount of internal damage. As the paramedics pushed him into the back of the ambulance, Hunter motioned Solomon toward the emergency vehicle.
You should go. My priority is keeping you safe.
Hunter glared.
I could only hope the man would come after me and not the people I care about.
Solomon didn't budge. Officer Delgado and his partner showed up as the police on scene were finishing their questions.
Ready to talk to us now, Blackwell?
Solomon and Hunter exchanged looks.
Connor might have recorded something on the dashboard camera.
Hunter looked at the cops, knew he didn't have any choices left.
Follow us.
Her arm no longer hurt. Her foggy head was full of color and muffled noise. Gabby was vaguely aware of the two men holding her up and leading her into a house. They could be taking her to a ditch on the side of the road, and she wouldn't care. She remembered this. How could she have ever forgotten? The rush, the heat, then the next to nothing. How much of this would she remember? She attempted to keep her eyes open and take in what was going on around her. A nagging voice in her head told her to stay aware, keep alert. Another part told her to just feel. The floating and the power to forget everything would only last so long. Then the pain would return. Unlike the crash she'd experienced at the hands of Alonzo, she knew this one would be harder. Gabby wasn't sure how she'd managed to be slumped on the floor of a nearly empty living room, but the men who took her were kneeling beside her talking.
How much did you give her? We have at least an hour.
The handsome one placed a hand on her cheek and slapped it. Where's the pain?
You've caused me so much trouble, Mrs. Picano. If you'd left my money alone, none of this would have had to happen.
She closed her eyes, opened them when his palm slapped her again. Not my money, she mumbled.
No, it's mine.
His hand hadn't left her face as he stared at her. You can have it. I don't want it. Sleepy. She closed her eyes and heard the man switch languages. She recognized the words but didn't process them. Sleep was a much better option. Chapter 32. Andrew handed Hunter the phone as he walked in the door.
It's Neil. Gabby's missing,
he told his friend.
I know.
Hunter lifted the receiver to his ear.
Is my father alive?
He asked Neil without saying hello.
He's not here.
Your friend is banged up. Probably be able to sleep off most of it. Sounds like a couple of men ambushed him, knocked him around, and then jacked him on something that got him talking. He directed his attackers here. They slapped him with more drugs, then left. He remembers it being light when they jumped him. Last night? Must be. So the men who have my dad could be the same ones that have Gabby.
Neil was silent for a moment.
Yes, we do have Gabby on GPS, Blackwell. What?
For the first time in an hour, hope flared.
You have what? GPS. Inside her necklace. It must have took a hit because it's spotty, but Dennis is working with the data coming in.
He heard the police walking into the house and Solomon talking to them.
The police are here.
Another long pause.
Tell them what they need to know. I have a couple of friends I'm calling within the department. Time is critical right now.
Hunter hated the thought of cooperating with the criminals, but Gabby's kidnapper had made it clear he didn't want the police involved.
He said no cops. That was before he publicly kidnapped Gabby. He changed the rules, Blackwell.
Hunter's voice broke with his next words.
He has my wife, Neil. He needs her for the money. Needs her to assure his own freedom. He won't kill her.
Hunter squeezed his eyes shut. Hearing his deepest fears said aloud, gutted him. Dennis walked into the living room, paused, then waved Hunter toward him.
I think I have her. What?
Hunter lowered the phone and followed Dennis downstairs. The police were close behind. One of the cops whistled as they walked into the wine cellar recently converted into the command post of surveillance. Three of the monitors were full screens, all of them frozen. Dennis sat and started clicking as he spoke. Hunter put the phone on speaker.
You hearing all this, Neil? I am.
Dennis rolled the first screen. Hunter watched as he saw Gabby jump into the passenger seat of the Maserati and Connor peel out of the garage. They crashed on Sunset, Gabby had said. Dennis pointed at the screen.
Notice how Connor is constantly looking out the back window? He saw someone behind him,
Delgado observed.
Probably.
It appeared that Connor had racked up a dozen moving violations as they approached Sunset. Hunter heard the phone ring on the recording.
This is me calling him, letting him know that you and Solomon were fine and the call was a setup.
Gabby was tossed around when Connor swung the car around.
Hold on,
were the last words before it appeared someone hit the car from behind. An explosion of white filled the frame.
Airbags,
Dennis said. Hunter was relieved to hear Gabby's shaken voice call Connor's name. Connor was muttering, but Hunter couldn't make out what he said. The camera was knocked out of place, not giving them a shot of Gabby's face, but Hunter saw her attempt to reach Connor with her broken arm. He could hear her breathing heavily as she called his name. The door to the car opened, and a male face filled the frame. Dennis froze the frame, looked behind him to the cops.
That's our guy. Keep rolling,
Hunter said. The man in the frame used Gabby's name, rolled his R's in a slow, seductive way.
Do I know you?
Her captor simply smiled. They all heard Gabby offer a gasp and then a sigh. When he lifted her from the car, she was limp.
What did he do to her? Chloroform, drugs, hard to tell,
Dennis said matter-of-factly. Hunter fisted his hands. Dennis flipped to the next screen.
Here's the GPS. I'll run this with a video and you can see where the problem is and possibly the location of Gabby.
His eyes darted back and forth between the video of the car footage and the blip on the map. The second the car crashed, the GPS blinked out. When Gabby was lifted from the car, it blipped again in the same location for 10 seconds. Then it went dark. When it blipped again, it was a quarter mile down Sunset. It was dark. On the other monitor, bystanders were poking their heads into the car, telling Connor an ambulance was on the way.
I'm going to fast forward.
Dennis pushed both videos forward. Hunter heard his own voice frantically calling for Gabby.
Wait, can you back that up?
Delgado asked. Dennis pushed a button, only for Hunter to hear his plea again.
Your driver is saying something.
Dennis rewound again, turned up the sound.
WLH 649.
Delgado, Solomon, and Dennis all said,
License plate.
Delgado turned to his partner.
Run it.
The other cop turned away and spoke into his radio.
This is about 30 minutes ago.
Dennis showed the blip on the GPS. It glowed steady for a few seconds, then blinked off.
And this was 10 minutes ago. It's in the same spot.
Dennis offered a nod. Hunter poked a finger on the screen.
Zoom in. Holy crap. That's 2 blocks over,
Delgado said. Hunter stood tall and turned for the stairs. Delgado stopped him with his arm.
Where are you going, Blackwell? To save my wife. Slow down.
Hunter pulled out of his grip and glared.
He's right, Mr. B. We don't know what we're walking into. Neil?
Hunter yelled to the phone. No reply. Dennis lifted the receiver.
Not here.
Delgado lifted both hands.
We'll bring in SWAT, hostage negotiators. We do this right and no one gets hurt. Don't forget your father. We don't know if he's in there,
Solomon said. Delgado stepped forward.
Your father?
Dennis shrugged.
Hostage number 2. Damn it.
Delgado lifted a finger in front of Hunter's face.
No one goes anywhere. Don't make me arrest you, Blackwell.
The cop turned and walked up the stairs. Hunter's teeth started to ache with all the grinding they were doing.
Now what?
Dennis offered half a smile and turned back to the monitors. The third one fired up. Another set of GPS blips moved on the screen.
Gabby? Nope.
He pointed to the red blip.
Neil.
Pointed to the green blip.
Rick. Probably.
They were closing in on the neighborhood fast.
It will all go away if I keep my eyes closed.
She tried, but the need to crash into the real world sucker-punched her. With the light came the pain. With a mouth full of cotton and her body in a cold sweat, Gabby attempted to focus.
A house. Yeah, she remembered a house.
Her captors left her propped up against a wall and an empty bookshelf. She wasn't tied up, but her limbs were difficult to move anyway. All the windows were covered with thick drapes that barely let any light in.
You're awake.
Gabby swung her head, quickly regretted it. He was tied up, arms behind his back, legs together with duct tape, swollen eye and split lip. He'd put up a struggle, but he wasn't a young man, and from the condition of his clothes and appearance, didn't seem fit at all.
Who are you?
She asked. He attempted to smile, his good eye crinkled in a familiar way.
Sherman Blackwell.
Oh,
Hunter's father.
And who are you?
Gabriella Blackwell.
Ah, the woman turning my son around.
She disregarded his words and pulled one of her legs close to her chest, then the other. She looked beyond the entry to the room.
Are they still here?
Sherman nodded.
Other room. Walk in every 10 minutes to see if you're awake.
What time is it?
Sherman rolled his eyes.
Left my Rolex at home.
How long do you think I've been here?
An hour? Maybe.
Gabby ran her good hand over her chest to rub out the ache. She looked down to see a nasty bruise from what she guessed was the seatbelt of the car. Her fingers fell across the pendant on her neck. She bit her lip before lifting the GPS device and kissing it. Heavy footfalls came from the direction of what looked to be a hall. Gabby shoved the pendant under her shirt and tried to relax against the wall.
Awake at last, Signora.
She blinked several times.
Who are you?
The familiarity of his face scared her. He lifted his pants before kneeling at her side.
I'm offended you don't know.
We've met?
Not formally. I'm surprised your husband did not introduce us.
You're a colleague of Hunter's?
Not that husband. Your poor departed one. He and I were very close.
Her ears rang, reminding her of an old saying about how when your ears ring, it was a sign of someone in the future walking over your grave.
Diaz, she whispered.
I'm flattered. Too bad I can't let you live now that you've seen my face and know my name. It's not personal, Gabriella.
Her stomach twisted. Diaz ran a finger under her chin.
Such a shame with one so beautiful. You understand, no?
She pulled away from his fingers and he laughed.
Why am I alive now?
He kept laughing.
Beautiful but a fool, eh, old man? Leave her alone,
Gabby heard Sherman tell Diaz.
Chivalry, how sweet. Unfounded in this circumstance, but a nice gesture.
Diaz reached behind him and removed a gun from the waist of his pants. Gabby tried not to breathe as Diaz ran it along her jaw.
Here are the rules, Gabriella. Do I have your attention?
Yes, she muttered.
You scream and I shoot him. He yells and I shoot you. Equality is important in this decade, no?
What a sick man.
You understand my rules so far?
She nodded once.
Good. When I put the phone to your ear, you say exactly what I want you to say or I shoot him.
Dia swung the gun toward Hunter's father.
You're going to kill us anyway,
Sherman said. Diaz tapped the gun onto Gabby's chest, his finger hovering over the trigger.
Yes, but slowly or quickly.
Diaz moved the gun along Gabby's arm and rested at the crook.
Or maybe I'll show mercy and let you leave this life on a cloud.
He leaned close. She felt his lips on her ear.
You'd like that, wouldn't you?
She whimpered.
Once they have a taste, they always want more.
With that, Diaz shifted on the balls of his feet and stood. He grabbed Gabby's good arm and hauled her to her feet.
Time for that phone call.
The media made it outside the house before the cavalry. The phone rang long before any hostage negotiator was en route. Hunter picked up the landline on the first ring.
Hello? I told you no police, Blackwell.
Solomon rolled his fingers in the air.
Keep him talking, he whispered.
The police in the room quieted down.
You kidnapped my wife in broad daylight. I didn't call the police. Nevertheless, you're going to make all of them leave. That manservant of yours and your driver, they all leave. You have 5 minutes before I begin removing parts of your beautiful wife one by one. How do I know if Gabby's alive? Say hello.
There was a muffle, then Hunter heard the sweetest thing ever. Hello?
Gabby, tell him you're okay.
Diaz instructed every word out of Gabby's mouth. I'm okay, Hunter.
God, Gabby, we'll get you out of there.
He gripped the phone tight enough to break it. Diaz laughed.
Now tell him you love him.
He heard the cry in her voice. I love you, Hunter. His heart cracked.
I love you too.
Only his words fell on Diaz's ears.
5 minutes, Blackwell.
The line went dead. Hunter twisted around the room.
Everyone out!
Chapter 33. As the 5 minutes Diaz gave Hunter to clear the house ticked on, Gabby's head slowly cleared from the fog. The fear she'd heard in Hunter's voice scared her. Was there a problem tracking her? Did he know where she was? Did the security team know? She'd been in the house for over an hour, had no idea how much time had passed before arriving. Plenty of time for the team to track her. Why had they not intervened? A cell phone lying on the table rang and Diaz answered in Spanish. Gabby moved her eyes to the other side of the room, doing her level best to pretend she didn't understand one word. The one-sided conversation proved easy to follow. The police were exiting the Blackwell home. The media was pushed down the street. Hunter was alone. Diaz instructed the caller to stand by. He picked up another phone and dialed.
Very good, Mr. Blackwell. Now, when I give you the signal, I want you to take the money, climb over that back fence of yours, travel through your neighbor's yard to the other street, and continue north. I will call you when you need to drop the money.
Gabby hung on the next words.
Oh, you'll know the signal. It will make the evening news.
She started to shake, told herself it was because of the fear in her veins. Her arm under her cast started to itch. Diaz disconnected the call and turned his attention to the other line. In Spanish, Diaz told the person on the phone to press the button and to return to the house where he could collect his money and his heroin. Gabby scratched the back of her neck. With a wicked grin, Diaz winked at her.
Hold your ears.
What? The house shook. Gabby found herself ducking, expecting the house to topple. Diaz disconnected the call and mumbled,
Stupid bastard. Never put your trust in the wrong person, Gabriella.
He actually laughed.
Oh, that's right. You've already done that a few times.
Another man, this one thin and jumpy, moved into the room.
I'm ready to go.
Diaz waved him off. The thinner man ran into the living room, and Gabby heard Sherman protesting. She started to stand, only to have Diaz point his gun in her direction.
We have to give your husband something for his money.
Gabby bit her lip and scratched the itch under her skin.
From the corner of her eye, she saw that Sherman's feet were cut free, his hands still bound, as he was shoved at gunpoint out of her sight. Hunter stood in the wine cellar and waited. When the explosion rocked the house, he and Dennis both ducked. When he looked up, Dennis was checking the monitors. The cameras around the house were secure. A glow from the south told them the explosion wasn't far away, but it wasn't on the property.
Guess that's my signal.
Dennis reached over and zipped up the jacket over the bulletproof vest and spoke into his phone.
Eagle is leaving the nest. Copy. Stay close to the edges of the road so you can duck and cover into a yard. If the guy is smart, he'll know you're armed. When he asks, remove the one from your back and toss it.
Hunter looked at the GPS screen, noted four dots. Two were on the house where Gabby sat. The other two were closer to them. The police radio at Dennis's side sent a command.
Go.
Hunter took the stairs three at a time. He picked up the heavy duffel bag and started out the back door. He tossed the bag over the brick wall dividing the properties and followed it. The neighbors weren't home and they didn't own dogs. He'd take his blessings one at a time. He hopped another fence and headed north. A quarter of a mile up the road, Hunter started to wonder if this was a decoy or a setup of some sort. When his phone rang, he answered without stopping.
There's a dumpster on your left. I see it. Drop my package inside.
Hunter turned in a circle.
Where's Gabby?
Safe, I assure you.
Your assurance means shit. Look ahead. See that van?
A white van with what looked like a pizza delivery logo on the side sat at the end of the street. The side door opened and Hunter peered closer.
Dad?
He whispered.
A good con always has two options, eh, Blackwell? You're a businessman. You understand. Drop the money in the dumpster and I leave your father behind.
What about Gabby?
All in due time. Gabby will help me leave in one piece. You show me good faith, and I'll live by my word.
Hunter refrained from laughing. A man held his father and shoved him until he yelled,
Fuck these men, Hunter!
Hunter ran to the other side of the street and tossed the duffel into the bin and stepped away.
Good man.
His father was shoved from the van before it sped away. Hunter started to run toward his father. Around the corner, a garbage truck turned onto the street. As Hunter fell onto his father, the van that fled exploded. Hunter ducked his head and covered his father's. When he looked up, the van was engulfed. His father was out cold, and the garbage truck disappeared $10 million richer. Gabby focused on the syringe that sat just beyond her reach on the table. She'd seen him draw up the heroin and knew it was enough to kill whoever came in contact with the needle. Her death blow, the way she'd leave this world? The gun in Diaz's hand didn't scare her as much as that syringe. He shouted orders, waited to hear they'd been followed, then shouted more. He switched from Spanish to English, none the wiser that Gabby caught every word. Gabby flinched when the house shook a second time. The second explosion took place while Diaz was on the phone with his accomplice. In a cold response, Diaz shook his head and placed his phone into his pocket.
These kids just keep blowing up.
You killed them?
Such a nasty word. I liberated them to their next destination. Death is simply a route to the next life.
He shook the gun in her direction.
It's a fear of death that keeps men in line. When you don't fear it, that's when you make the most of this world, this life.
Gabby felt herself breathing heavily. He was crazy, calculated, and smart. Right at that moment, she felt just as crazy, just as calculated, and much smarter.
Time to go, Mrs. Picano.
Don't call me that, she told him. Diaz paused.
Giving demands.
It's Mrs. Blackwell. He lifted one brow and grinned. A shadow outside the drawn blinds of the kitchen caught her attention. Diaz turned and Gabby reached across the table and palmed the syringe. Before Diaz turned back, a third explosion went off. The smile on Diaz's face fell as he swung toward the noise, obviously not expecting it. He let out a stream of obscenities as he grabbed her arm and pulled her to her feet. As her captor lifted the hand holding the gun toward her, Gabby stopped fearing death. With the arm in a cast, she swung against his weapon, watched it scatter across the room as it filled with smoke.
He twisted his body so hers shielded his. She felt her air cutting off. As Diaz backed them toward the door to what she assumed was a garage, Gabby removed the cap of the syringe without Diaz noticing. Struggling to stay on her feet, Gabby lifted her hand as she was dragged back, and each breath became an effort. She went for his neck, prayed she didn't miss and hit hers. Her thumb pressed the plunger the moment she heard him curse. Diaz took two steps back, cursed her name as his hand fell, and they both stumbled to the floor. Two darkly clothed men wearing some kind of breathing masks over their faces burst into the house with guns bigger than any she'd ever seen outside of a movie. They hesitated when they saw her. She turned toward Diaz. The syringe was still in his neck. She saw blood inside. His eyes were open, a sick smile forever on his face. Her eyes drifted closed. A mask was shoved over her nose and mouth, and someone tied a string around the back of her head as sirens sounded outside the house.
Gotta go, babe.
Someone patted her head, and the two men left. Hunter heard a third explosion in the direction of Gabby's GPS. He saw smoke as his father was waking up.
You alive?
Hunter asked in a rush.
I gotta stop drinking, Sherman said.
Hunter released a breath of relief.
I have to find Gabby. Go.
Hunter didn't have to be told twice. He ran toward the third explosion with a prayer on his lips. When he hopped the fourth block wall of the day, Hunter vowed to hire a personal trainer to make this shit easier. As he crossed the street before the explosion, Hunter noticed two fully masked, armed men running toward a dark van. One turned his way, offered a salute, and slammed the door before peeling away. Hunter moved faster. He burst through the door of the house that was filled with smoke as sirens assaulted his ears. He didn't get far before he found Gabby on the floor, a man at her side. Someone pushed him beside him and helped drag her out of the house. Hunter's lungs filled with smoke, causing him to cough. The Good Samaritan started back into the house. Hunter stayed behind and held Gabby's head in his lap. The unknown helper stumbled out coughing.
Dead. He's...
Three squad cars rolled up, lights blaring. He felt Gabby's hand touch his arm, and she smiled through the mask. Hunter released tears he didn't think he owned and dropped his head to hers. Gabby refused the ride to the hospital, which prompted Hunter to request a house call from his personal physician. With a few questions about the dead man in the house and Gabby's and Sherman's accounts of who he was, the police allowed Hunter to take her home. She was still groggy as Hunter slipped her into a hot bath. Mindful of her cast, he washed the day out of her hair and off her skin. He moved in silence, as if treasuring every moment. He worked in silence, and she let him. With the help of a giant bath towel, he dried her off and brushed out her hair. Only when the doctor arrived did he leave the room. Gabby pointed to her aches and pains, let the doctor know that her captor had definitely drugged her. She wanted to omit her knowledge of the drug, but there wasn't any mistaking the heroin that had ran in her veins. The doctor drew a few vials of blood and requested she go to the hospital should any of the lab results return with a failing grade. Hunter met the doctor at the door. She overheard him asking the doctor about her health, felt some satisfaction when he said she was probably fine. If anything pained her excessively in the morning, to report to him so they could run a few tests, take an X-ray or two. She was drifting off to sleep in the comfort of her bed when she heard Hunter arguing.
We have a few more questions and then we'll leave until tomorrow. Hasn't she been through enough? No one is arguing that, Blackwell.
It's okay, Hunter. I just want to get this over with, Gabby said from the bed. Officer Delgado entered the room with Hunter. Hunter helped Gabby sit up on the bed and tucked the covers around her.
I'm sorry we have to do this, Mrs. Blackwell.
She closed her eyes. Let's just do it.
Tell me what you remember.
She started from the moment the car crashed, paused briefly to ask about Connor. Hunter said at last check he was concussed with a few broken ribs, but he'd be back to normal in a few weeks. Gabby replayed the moment when she knew she'd been drugged. Hunter moved to the bed beside her and held her hand as she talked. Then I met your dad.
He's okay, at the hospital.
Gabby nodded and continued. She talked about the gun, the threats, how Diaz had no intention of letting her go. She replayed seeing someone outside the window in the house filling with smoke. I knew the syringe held a lethal dose. He told me it did. I couldn't fight him. It's all I had. Officer Delgado wrote a note and looked up.
I can't imagine anyone faulting you for his death. You managed to keep your wits, and that couldn't have been easy.
Gabby rested her head on Hunter's shoulder.
What happened next?
It was foggy. I couldn't breathe. Someone was there and a mask helped clear my lungs.
Who was there?
She shook her head. I never saw a face. Black mask. Then a hunter was holding me outside.
You have no idea who placed a mask on your face?
I just escaped death, officer. Knew my assailant was dead. I wasn't questioning my good luck and quizzing the man offering clean air.
It was a man?
Or a bulky woman. I couldn't say for sure. Delgado blew out a breath. The officer stood and extended a card.
If you remember anything else.
Andrew and Delgado passed in the doorway.
I brought soup.
3 days later, Gabby and Hunter sat beside Lori and a team of lawyers, half Hunter's, half Samantha's, and the district attorney. Every detail on who Diaz was, why he had targeted her, her bank accounts, and the insurance mistake she would gladly pay in full if the courts would allow it, was spelled out. It helped that the media had painted her the unfortunate socialite who had married a billionaire only to find herself kidnapped and held for ransom. There were 3 men dead and a few more recovering in hospitals, and Gabby sporting enough color on her face to make a supermodel happy. In case the outcome wasn't what they wanted, Hunter and his PR team had prepared a press conference directly following the meeting with the DA. As it turned out, Diaz had been a vicious player in the drug community who had taken a hit when the shipment Alonzo Picano was responsible for went missing. Diaz was quickly recovering when Gabby switched the accounts. All that said, the DA said they would have to launch a full investigation, but he didn't see any criminal charges being brought against her. As for the insurance fraud, the DA held little jurisdiction but would offer testimony on her behalf. With the return of the money and the DA refusing to press charges, the chances of the insurance company getting anywhere was slim. Gabby left the DA's office on Hunter's arm, their team claiming a holiday victory. Instead of a press conference, the family and friends who'd gathered in her support followed them home. There, Andrew and a small team of people had prepared a pre-holiday feast. Perhaps bought a pre-holiday feast was a better word. Not that Gabby cared. The thought was what counted.
Why are we having a party today?
Hunter asked Blake when he noticed Samantha ushering children and a few nannies into a yet-to-be-furnished downstairs den.
Appearances are important, Blake told him. I don't really get it, but Sam insists.
Hunter smiled and moved beside Gabby as they walked around the room. They thanked Judy and Rick for their support, and Gabby noticed Hunter's predatory gaze when she hugged Judy's brother, Michael. Thank you for coming.
If those sharks started picking on you, they would have had to deal with me.
Gabby turned to Hunter. Have you two met?
I doubt there are many left who don't know who you are.
Gabby laughed. Sucks being a movie star. Michael winked and turned his attention to a man who approached with a glass of wine. Gabby introduced Ryder without an explanation as to who he was or why he was there. Hunter didn't ask, and she didn't offer more. Carter Billings moved beside Neil and shook Hunter's hand. Gabby accepted a hug from Carter and a pat on the arm from Neil. I feel I need to thank you, she told Neil. He shrugged.
Not sure why.
Dressed in black, armed to the teeth, she leaned in and kissed his cheek. Thank you. Neil tipped his beer back, offered one nod, and walked away.
Such a chick magnet, that one, Carter muttered before walking away.
Gabby sipped on wine, thankful once again that she could enjoy it. She reacquainted Hunter with Zack and Karen. At one point, Meg pushed in and pulled Karen away. Hunter leaned in and whispered,
You have a great group of friends.
She reflected on his observation. 2 years ago, I didn't have one friend to call mine. Hunter didn't look convinced. A scruffy voice said her name from behind her. Sherman. Gabby opened her uncasted arm to the man. I'm so glad you could make it.
Doctor wanted to keep me for a few more days. Told him I had better places to be.
Gabby stood back as Hunter and his father squared off.
Glad to see a vertical, Dad. It's a new look.
Hunter laughed.
Been 4 days without a drink. First day didn't really count, since that shit cut me off without asking. But I'm claiming it anyway.
Gabby's heart tugged a little when Hunter and his father embraced. The sound of someone tapping a glass and making it ring made her turn around. Val stood with a glass in his hand, a smile on his face.
I'd like to propose a toast.
Meg lifted her glass of what looked like sparkling cider and leaned into her husband. Gabby's mother was already a couple of glasses into the wine. She didn't have far to go until nap time. A few more people pushed into the circle and raised their glasses.
I know we're all here for Gabby, to support her, but I also know my sister, Val said. She's genuinely shy enough to avoid that attention. So this toast isn't only for her, it's for everyone. For friends. The kind that stick by you, support you whenever and wherever you need them.
Val lifted his glass and the room filled with the clicking of glasses. Gabby took in the faces and the glasses. Gwen was drinking milk. Karen held cider like Meg. Hey.
What? Hunter asked.
Ignoring him, she narrowed her gaze toward Gwen. Milk? You're drinking milk? Gwen glanced at her glass and closed her lips. Eliza stopped sipping her champagne before she said, Gwen's knocked up? Meg squealed. Sam giggled and sipped her wine. Don't look at me. We're good, right, Blake?
Diapers and middle-of-the-night food runs. I'm good, Blake said.
Gwen lifted her milk in the air. 3 months along. Rick turned to Judy.
Time to step up to the plate, don't you think, babe?
Judy hit her husband and Meg spit out her milk. Judy turned red. Plus sign this morning. I wanted to wait to tell you.
Rick, who was all smiles, stumbled back.
Wait, what?
Blake smacked Rick on the back.
It's about to become an unholy hormonal mess. I say we leave now, men. Come back in 9 months.
There was another round of toasts. The only ones feeling the buzz at the end of the night were a few good women and a gaggle of men. Chapter 34. Ever since she'd returned from her brief captivity, Hunter had been by her side, offering his support. He tucked her into bed, spent time with her until she fell asleep. But when she woke, the space beside her was cold and empty. The kitchen held the usual suspects. Solomon sat beside Andrew, sipping coffee. A stack of pancakes were piled next to the stove.
Morning, Mrs. B.
Andrew jumped up and fixed her a plate. He'd gotten in the habit of not asking and simply serving since her return. She wasn't about to tell the man no, and he knew it. She took a bite to appease the man. You added cinnamon.
I've been online researching recipes.
Gabby took a second bite and smiled. Where's Hunter? The men did that looking thing she was getting used to. They looked at each other, said 1,000 words without uttering one. Andrew.
He's, at the,
His stuttering had the pancake in her stomach turning to stone. Spit it out.
The condo. He slept at the penthouse last night.
From the way the men were staring at her, waiting for her reaction, Gabby knew it wasn't a trip to his flat to retrieve his personal belongings. Oh. She pushed her plate away and stood. Gabby took her coffee, grabbed a throw from the back of the couch as she made her way outside. She opened the French doors that spilled onto a deep, covered patio. A double chaise sat on one end and looked out over the backyard. The gray skies and moist drizzle matched her mood and offered the perfect quiet to reflect on her life. At least now she knew where Hunter was spending his nights. She thought perhaps he'd taken to a guest room, but apparently that wasn't the case. He didn't need her any longer. Noah had paid off the mother of his child and had taken Hayden to a suburb of Boston. According to Hunter, his brother was looking for work in the city. What kind of work, he didn't know. But he hadn't asked for any money. Then a registered letter arrived with Hayden's official birth certificate. Noah's name was posted in the box under father. When Hunter had told her the story of how he convinced his brother to leave, she'd never been more proud of the man she'd married. She didn't doubt he was ready to take Hayden as his own son, but he was doing it for all the wrong reasons. Still, when she passed through the unused nursery, a deep part of Gabby ached. It was starting to look like she was going to be the childless aunt, the woman who couldn't marry the right man. Too bad she didn't care for cats. A house full of them would complete the cliché. The coffee had gone cold,
and despite the prickle of her skin, Gabby huddled under the blanket and watched the drops of rain fall from the sky.
Hey?
She glanced up from her meditative state to see Hunter standing in the doorway. He wore a turtleneck sweater and dark pants. His casual, "I'm not going to the office," look. Looking at him physically hurt.
Hey.
He moved to the end of the lounge chair and sat. In his hand was an envelope that he nervously tapped on his thigh.
Did you sleep well?
They'd been reduced to small talk. Can we please skip the niceties? His silence had her looking up. Hunter stared at the envelope in his hand.
What is that?
Instead of answering, he handed it to her. She moved quickly, refusing to dwell and linger over what-ifs. Gabby removed the thick stack of official papers and unfolded them. One word was all she needed to see.
You filed for a divorce?
She didn't need to see any more and dropped the papers at her side. He reached out and touched her foot. She flinched. His eyes met hers as he returned his hands to his lap.
It's not what I want.
Last time I looked, the one who filed for a divorce is the one who wants it, Hunter.
It's not what I want to do. It's what I have to do.
She bit her lip to keep it from trembling. Mind explaining that? I've had a crazy week and playing on words is too much for me to process right now. He paused.
I met this beautiful, intelligent, caring woman who flat out turned me down. My overinflated ego was mortally wounded, and what did I do? I blackmailed her. I found any and every speck of dirt I could dig up and used it to get what I wanted, completely disregarding what it would do to her.
Hunter's self-degradation was a new twist, not something Gabby enjoyed seeing, even if all he said was true.
My inner selfish bastard took complete advantage of the situation, and I brought you into my bed. Then I nearly got you killed, not once, not twice, but 3 times, Gabby. All for what? Pride? Money?
He ran out of words and lowered his head. Her head started to bob.
You're right. About all of it.
I don't deserve you.
Except about bringing me into your bed. My eyes were wide open then. Did you seduce me? Maybe. I'd like to think I share some of the credit for that time.
I should have stayed away.
I like to think I made that impossible.
A ghost of a smile passed over his lips.
I'm so sorry, Gabby. Sorry for forcing this marriage, for putting your life in danger.
His eyes lingered on her cast,
for bringing you so much pain. Giving you what you've wanted since we met is the only thing left for me to do.
She picked up the divorce papers a second time.
You said this isn't what you want.
It isn't, he said.
She looked at him and asked,
What do you want?
I want the impossible. I want to go back and do this over. I want to meet that beautiful, intelligent, caring woman again and slowly bring her into my world until she can't see hers without me in it. I want to treasure her every day of the week, every month of the year. I want her to know that because of her, I want to be a better man, the kind of man that deserves her, the kind of man she wants for all her tomorrows.
Moisture gathered behind his eyes as he spoke, while hers spilled over. This time when he placed a hand on her leg, she didn't pull away.
I want to hear her tell me she loves me because she does, not because she's forced to. I want to ask her to marry me and stand before a minister or priest, a rabbi for all I care, and watch her walk down the aisle and freely join her life with mine.
Hunter.
He picked up the papers and dropped them again.
I know this is a backwards way to go, but divorcing you and trying again is the only way any of this can happen. I will forever question our life if we don't do this first.
He scooted closer and placed a hand alongside her face.
I love you, Gabby. I know I don't deserve you right now, but I'm going to one day. God willing, you'll take me up on my promise for tomorrow's.
Her heart kicked hard as she removed the space between them and placed her lips on his. He melted and drew her close. She opened to the invitation of his tongue and kissed him with her whole being. He loved her, wanted forever. And the knowledge of his feelings fueled her passion even higher.
Take me inside, Hunter. Make love to me.
He rested his head on hers.
One last time before I move out.
She shook her head. I'll agree to the divorce because your twisted view makes jumbled sense in my head, but you're not moving out.
But...
Marriage is a two-way street, Hunter. Sometimes things go your way, sometimes they go mine.
But...
She placed a finger over his lips.
You want me to sign those papers?
He nodded.
Then it's my turn to blackmail you. I'll sign if you agree to stay. We can wait on all of the other parts, but leaving me alone in this house isn't an option.
He pushed away a strand of her hair.
Okay, Gabby. Whatever you want.
And one more thing?
Yes?
I love you too.
Epilogue. 6.5 months later. Picking a maid of honor was the easiest decision in Gabriella's life. Samantha patted Gabby's back as she fastened the last pearl on her dress.
You're all in.
Gabby turned to the full-length mirror and gazed at her reflection. Pearls and lace, crystals and silk. The dress belonged on royalty. Today, Gabby felt royal.
Hunter's going to have a hell of a time getting this off.
He deserves it. Brat moved out the last 2 weeks, all the stress of a divorce and a wedding, and he hasn't put out once.
Sam started to laugh and didn't stop until her eyes started to well up. A knock on the door preceded a parade of maternity wear.
Gwen and Karen were on borrowed time. The Harrison pack flew in with a private physician and a nurse. There was no telling if either of them would make it through the ceremony without going into labor.
Meg was just as big, but a week away from her due date.
Judy held last place with a month and a half to go.
Being closer to Sam than Eliza, Sam was the easy choice of attendant to officially witness her vows to Hunter.
Gabby's mother pushed into the room, patting bellies as she went. She paused when she saw Gabby in front of the mirror.
You're the most beautiful bride, she said in Italian. Your father would be so proud.
Gabby kissed her mother's cheeks.
Thanks, Mama.
Let's not wait long. That husband of yours?
Simona stopped herself with a shake of her head.
That fiancé of yours is already pacing.
Gabby listened to her mother leave the room, muttering about crazy daughters, divorces, and weddings.
Okay, ladies, do we have everything?
Sam asked. Karen raised her hand, presented a tiny box.
Something old.
Gabby let out a long sigh.
Oh, you didn't have to.
I didn't. It was your mom. She said she wore it when she married your father and wanted your marriage to be as happy as hers. The box held a delicate comb to place in her hair. Sam kicked off her 4-inch heels, stepped on top of a chair, and attached the clip. Eliza handed the next box.
Something new. And before you ask, I didn't. It's from Hunter. He insisted, and everyone here is too damn tired to shop.
That had the women laughing and holding their bellies. The diamond tennis bracelet captured her breath.
Well played, Hunter, she heard Meg say under her breath.
Judy handed the next gift. Something borrowed. They're from me. I wore them on my second wedding day to Rick. The pearl drop earrings were perfect.
This is why you said no jewelry with the dress, Gabby said to Sam. I'm sneaky that way.
Something blue, Meg said. For the record, I wanted to give you an early pregnancy test. Blue for yes, pink for no. But I was vetoed.
I'm not pregnant, Gabby said with a laugh.
The day is young, Eliza pointed out. The blue garter was perfect. Sam did the ceremonial placement while Gwen approached last.
I always give the sixpence for the shoe.
A what?
Gwen dismissed her pending question with a look. It's a British thing, just go with it.
Gabby placed the tiny coin in the bottom of her shoe with a giggle. Music started to play outside and the women waddled toward the door. Sam handed Gabby her bouquet and pulled a strand of hair from her perfectly messy bun. The kind of hairstyle Hunter couldn't resist. Gabby looked through the open door to find her brother staring with an open mouth.
I'll see you out there.
Sam kissed her cheeks and left the two of them alone.
My God, Tesoro, Hunter is a lucky man.
She took her brother's hands in hers as he kissed her cheek.
This is what you want, Gabby. You're not married. You can walk away now and...
She placed a finger over her brother's lips before resting her hand on his shoulder.
My life isn't complete without him. I want your blessing, Val. Completely.
You have it. Papa would be proud.
Gabby glanced at the ceiling. I like to think he's here. Val kissed her fingers before offering his arm. The island courtyard had been fashioned for a wedding. A string quartet started the march, and everyone stood and turned her way. Gabby matched Hunter's stare, felt his excitement as much as her own as she approached. Dangerously handsome, Gabriella was selfishly claiming him a second time. Val placed her hand in Hunter's before taking a seat.
You're stunning, he said once she was by his side.
You say that to all the women you're about to marry. He kissed her hand.
You sure this is what you want?
She felt the eyes of everyone watching them, listening to their intimate conversation. Well, since you refused to step in front of a bus, and I'm not going to let any other woman have you, this looks like the best option. They were both holding back laughter as the priest cleared his throat. Blake tapped Hunter on the shoulder. Hunter lifted a hand in the air.
One more thing.
He leaned in.
I love you,
he whispered right before he kissed her. They turned toward the priest.
Ready now?
He asked. They nodded together.
Dearly beloved.
We hope you have enjoyed our presentation of Treasured by Thursday by Catherine Bybee. Performed by Tanya Eby. Performance copyright 2015 by Brilliance Audio. All rights reserved. For further information concerning this program or other Brilliance Audio titles, please call the following toll-free number, 1-800-222-3225, or visit our website at www.brillianceaudio.com. No part of this recording may be played for an audience or reproduced in any form. It may not be streamed, downloaded, broadcast, or copied without written permission. Address all inquiries to Brilliance Audio, P.O. Box 887, Grand Haven, Michigan, 49417.